Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show in association with Newsarama. This is John Suntress. Today, writer B. Clay Moore is back to talk about a slew of new books about to be released. Image Comics will be releasing the return of 1950s Private Eye Bird in the Tiki Noir series Hawaiian Dick, drawn by Scott Chandler. Also coming from Image, the double-featured 76, featuring Clay's Kung Fu street hero Jackie Karma. From DC Comics, Clay will be writing a Superman Confidential arc, drawn by Phil Hester and Andy Parks, that starts in January. And later in 2008, a JSA classified arc featuring a new direction for the Golden Age hero, Wildcat. We'll discuss these heroes and books, along with some other more projects from the past and coming up later next year. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. You can pick up Hawaiian Dick, The Last Resort from B. Clay Moore, or Battle Him, his great 1940s superhero story. Each book only $9.74 at InStock Trades. And don't forget to visit InStock Trades' sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at dcbservice.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com.
Let's start with Hawaiian Dick, back for the third season. Now, is it an ongoing monthly?
That's the idea, yeah.
Okay.
I think we may skip a month here or there just to kind of... the first story arc was originally going to be four issues, but it looks like I think we're going to do five issues now, and then we'll probably take a month off and then do either a standalone issue or two issues and then take another month off and then do another story arc, basically. So we may take a month off between story arcs just to kind of make sure we've got all our ducks in a row.
I like Chandler's art on the book. It gives the book kind of a spirit kind of feel to it.
Yeah, I can see that, I guess. We're in the process of just kind of turning the first issue into Image now, which will be out in about a month.
Okay.
And, actually, just about a month from today or yesterday. I don't know, I had actually sent you, did you get the link to the color previews that I sent?
Oh, yes, I did, sir. Yeah, I've read issue one.
Stephen Griffin, who, of course, co-created Hawaiian Dick and was nominated for 3 Eisners for his color work on the book, is back coloring Scott Chandler's work. And Stephen is also writing, drawing, and coloring a backup story that will run through the first 4 issues or 4 of the first 5 issues.
Oh, that's great.
Starring Kahame, who's like the female lead in the book, so...
Very cool.
Yeah, so we're pretty jazzed.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what you can as far as the first story arc?
Yeah, it's 1954, and Bird, who's the star of the book, kind of follows up from the previous 2 miniseries, and he gets involved in sort of a strange mystery involving a World War II flying squadron called the Black Thunder, and the story arc is called Screaming Black Thunder. And these guys are putting on aerial shows, and one of those is in Hawaii. And at the opening sequence, while Bird and Kahame are watching the aerial show, a Japanese Zero comes out of nowhere and fires on one of the squadron planes and then disappears, which, of course, is a little odd in 1954. So that sort of sends them on their way, and they try to figure out what's going on with that. And then we also begin to kind of introduce little plot elements that will continue throughout the series. Since it's not specifically a finite series, we can kind of begin to develop some plot lines that set up things to come down the road.
In a lot of ways, this first arc back feels like a combination of Battle Him and Hawaiian Dick, because I like the nods to the Silver Age that you see in the Thunderbolts. I think it's pretty neat.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big fan of... one of the completely forgotten, vanished genres in comics is the airplane comics, basically. Obviously, the Blackhawks were around for 30 years or so, and
sure.
I'm a big fan of the Blackhawks. That's just about the only sort of dream project I have, really. I think either Marvel or DC would be to do a Blackhawks book. But at the same time, there were a lot of aerial comics back when.
Oh yeah.
When fighter planes were Airboy and Flight Comics and Wings and all these books when
Captain
kids,
Midnight even.
Captain Midnight, there were other flyers. Skyman.
Sure.
And but that was back in the 40s and early 50s when especially when Jets first appeared. You know, they kind of captured kids' imaginations. So, in fact, one of the only comics that my dad has ever mentioned to me reading when he was young was Blackhawks. I had a back issue once when I was a kid, and he immediately could recall the characters and things that had happened back in the day when he was a boy during the early Jet age.
But, very cool.
So yeah, I threw those guys in there, and and Mo, who is kind of Bird's sidekick, he's a detective from Honolulu. If you haven't read the book, he's starting to kind of poke around and try to figure out what's going on in the Hawaiian underworld. So we're going to develop some separate plot lines and see how far we can take it.
Yeah, we were introduced to one of the former underworld bosses, the Thinker,
right, who appeared in the last series.
There you go. Oh, there you go. I forgot that he was in The Last Resort. So there you
yeah,
go.
He was the right hand man to one of the mob bosses who was dealt with in the last series, and he at the very end of the last series he escaped from the carnage with Bird and Mo and Kahami, and so he's now set up a Hawaiian gift shop in downtown Honolulu. And may or may not be up to something more than that. So
very cool. And the triangle is very healthy between Mo and Kalani and Bird.
Yep. Kahami and Bird kind of hanging out, and she's got a guy, one of these flyers that she meets, she might have an interest in. And the one thing that I've tried to do with the book that sort of I think defies typical expectations is not set up an immediate kind of romance between Bird and Kahami, the female and male leads of the book, just because it's such a cliche to do that. And I think it makes her more interesting if she's not just following Bird around like a puppy dog.
Sure.
Of course, anytime we've talked about the book to Hollywood, they've said, well, you know, of course, these two have to hook up. And I said, yeah, well, you guys do what you want to do with that. But
I want Mo. I'm rooting for Mo to get
if you pay attention, and if you're one of the few hardcore fans of the book, you'll have noticed that Mo is, he may have his eye on Kahami a little bit.
Sure.
She thinks of him as as kind of a big brother type, I think. So, but we'll have to see what happens.
Are there going to be, now you got the backup series by Steve, is there also mm-hmm. going to be room for any more cocktail, recipes? And
I don't know. It's funny, I a lot of people who read the book, and obviously people who've read the trade, the first trade, which is sadly out of print right now, but will be resolicited, we're reprinting it for, I think, for December. It'll be available in December.
Oh, great.
If you haven't read the trade, there's about 50 pages of bonus stuff in there that includes a cocktail menu that Steven illustrated and wrote, and just countless comic strips we did for the website, for the Image website, mm-hmm. and a text piece, and just all kinds of cool stuff. And but people have asked me, because in the first series we did, and part of the second series we did, like a guide to kind of Bird's Hawaii in the back, and I'm just amazed at how many people have asked me about that. The first issue doesn't really have that, but we do have sort of like a faux dossier on the Black Thunder Squadron.
Oh, cool!
Sort of an FBI document, we'll drop our drop little things in here or there when we get the chance to. So rather than just stuff it full of ads or pinups or what have you. So
no, that's cool, man, and that's fine. I mean, I think the tiki culture stuff was fun, but I think anything to expand the universe. It's so funny calling it that. I remember I talked to Brubaker about the criminal universe, and he kind of bristled, and he's like, you know, it's a town. It's not a universe. And
well, no, I make no bones about it. I think one of the cool things about doing all these creator-owned books, it's funny. I was just reading a book by George Pelicanos, crime writer, and I just got into his stuff, and I happened to read a book of his set in 1976, and then I read a book that had been written earlier, but it was from 1994, unrelated to the first book, and then I just read a sequel. I'm reading now the sequel to the book set in 76, and I noticed that one of the characters from the book that he wrote first, which was set in 1994, makes like a cameo appearance in this book, you know? He's like an incidental character who just appears, and there's a brief conversation and kind of goes off screen. And even though he doesn't really play a part, and you don't have to have read the book that he was in previously, I always like the fact that authors are, because they own everything they do, are kind of Carl Hiaasen is another author who did that a lot. He's got these Florida crime books that are fantastic. And he has these characters who may be like major characters in one book, and then will just kind of pop up in the background of another book and then disappear. And so I think, you know, doing all these Image books, if you're one of the very few people who have read all the stuff I did in Image, Battle Hymn, Expatriate, Hawaiian Dick, if you really pay attention, you can see there's a couple character. There's a character who appears both in Battleham and Expatriate that most people have never even mentioned. And there's a bit in Expatriate that refers back to Battleham if you really pay attention in the last issue we managed to get out. You know, and I've, you know, with 76, they're all set in different decades, all the books I've done in Image, the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s so far. So it kind of gives us a chance to, you know, well, maybe in the background you might kind of catch up on a character that last appeared in a book set in the 50s.
Cool.
You know, you might see him in this book in the 70s if you're paying attention. And so, I mean, even though the books have different tones and everything, they're all genre-based, you know, based on, you know, fun genres. So I think it's kind of cool to sort of sprinkle common threads throughout the book. So if you want, you know, if you want to call it the, you know, a universe, that's fine.
No, I like it. And yeah, you drop some good authors, and I'll throw Robert Parker and Elmore Leonard in there too as guys that do that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And not to go off on a tangent there, but I don't know, there's something, it's like a little bonus, you know, when you read the book and you're like, oh, well, I remember that guy, he was in a book I read, you know, 5 years ago, and he doesn't do anything but pop up in the background. So.
No question. No, I agree. I think it enriches the story, much like we're seeing in TV now too, that the meta story is as important as every episode that you watch. Good opportunity to transition to 76 and talk about that. Interesting book, and looking forward to talking to Seth Peck about this as well.
Yeah.
So Jackie Karma is your character.
Right.
And tell me about Jackie Karma.
Well, 76 is it's just it'll be solicited for January. So it'll be the solicitation will be in the next previews, which will be out in a couple weeks, I guess. It's an 8-issue miniseries, and there are two stories in each issue, two continuing stories in each issue. The story that an artist named Ed Tatum and I have done is called Jackie Karma, and it's Jackie is basically, you know, obviously the name of the book is 76. It's set in 1976.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is set in New York City, and Jackie is like a white kung fu warrior. Who, along with his partner, Marcus King, who was a black guy, were sort of active street fighters in the late 60s in New York City, kind of at the height of the Flower Power era.
Okay.
And they became kind of, you know, young, hip street legends and dealt with, you know, a lot of the street crime and stuff back then, and they retired. We picked the book up as they have both retired, you know, eight or 9 years down the road, and this guy they thought they dealt with back in the day pops back up, and he's a little more of a hardcore threat than he was back in the 60s. And so Jackie Karma, who's now John Carmichael, attorney at law, a third partner of theirs named Bobby Howler, who was the judo expert who used to hang out with him before he went into the service in Vietnam, he has encountered this guy on the streets, and so he contacts Jackie. And then Jackie goes and tracks down Marcus, who's now an activist. He's
okay.
He tracks him down in a library, and the two of them decide to get back together. And Jackie throws his old duds back on, and they decide to go out on the street again and kind of deal with this threat from the past. And it involves we throw all kinds of we've got just kind of throwing all the things that were fun about street level 70s exploitation flicks and fiction and comics and stuff. We've got, you know, the white kung fu warrior and the kung fu or the group called the Sabaki Boys, which is the order that Jackie Karma was a member of before he gave up on them, and they've never quite gotten over that. There's an Asian girl named Holly Gold that we don't know much about who has a sword and chops heads off. And there's the mob is involved. There's a mobster named Gino Valentino who's kind of entwined in everything. And there's a female private eye named Sam Jones.
So is that the Pam Grier of the?
Kind of. She's
could be.
She's maybe a little harder edge. Pam Grier never started that hard edge. She always got abused until she lost her mind and snapped in those movies. But yeah, she's a little harder edge, Pam Grier.
Okay.
You know, she gets involved, and so, you know, we kind of throw all these elements together, and then as the book goes on, we sort of strip away the layers and see what the real threat is on the streets. And I think the luxury of doing this in 2007 is that we can kind of, there's things that sort of popped up in the 80s that people, without giving too much away, that people have theories about, and how they go back into the 70s in terms of drug culture and this and that. So it all kind of leads to some, it sort of ties in with some conspiracy theories that you started hearing in the 80s.
Okay.
About street life and what have you. So
that's cool.
And then Seth and an artist named Ty Walker are doing the other side of the book, which is called Cool, which is set in Los Angeles in 1976 and deals with a couple bounty hunters who have to track down some stolen drugs, a stripper, they have to deal with a dwarf drug dealer, and an ex-porn star hitman, and all kinds of cool stuff. So the book's a lot of fun. I don't know if it'll find its niche or not, but we've already got 4 issues in the can.
Cool.
And the first issue's not out for about 3 months, so we're in pretty good shape.
I saw the preview pages over on the Bendis board.
Yeah, we actually put a blog together that's just 76.blogspot.com that we've kind of updated and put some preview pages and some concept art and some covers and things like that on. So might be a good place to kind of drop in and see if it's something people would be interested in. But
I think the covers are great, and I remember seeing those as the project was developing, and you guys gave me the ash can last year to check out. So, I've been waiting for this one, and I look forward to it. And also, you're like me, Clay. We like the weird stuff from especially like the 70s and 60s. I know you're a hard case crime library fan, as am I. Those great Men's Adventure magazines.
Oh, yeah.
That Marvel, actually, it was part of, Magazine Entertainment, the company that owned Marvel back in the 60s and stuff.
Yep.
While Martin Goodman was, cranking out Marvel Comics, he was also doing these crazy Men's Adventures magazines that guys like Mario Puzo even wrote for.
Yeah.
And just, made up World War II stories and just great, crazy genre fiction. So, I can see that as kind of the seeds of the inspiration for some of your ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of half-naked women in bondage on the covers being assaulted by Nazis or sometimes motorcycle gangs or whatever. But ultimately what we'll end up with is we'll have the equivalent of 2 4-issue miniseries in the, with the 8 issues. But the stories are so similar, and we both had kind of similar ideas, Seth Peck and I, so we decided the idea to put them together seemed natural, and it's made it easier to kind of assemble a book. The key to it is that unlike some books that have had double features or whatever, I just don't see any way that if you like one, you're not going to like the other story. So and Ed and I have talked. Ed Tatum, the artist on Jackie Carm, is just a phenomenal talent. He's a guy that I've had other artists who are friends of mine. He's one of these guys who's had a blog and he's been active and he makes his living through art, but he hasn't been a comic book artist, and he's a young guy. And artists who are friends of mine will be like, Ed Tatum, I've been wondering when that guy was going to, hook into something and start doing comics. And they've been kind of waiting for something. And he's just already heads and tails above, most comic book artists in terms of how he understands environment. And he builds scenes and his pacing and everything. It's the kind of stuff a lot of readers and editors and even other writers don't always seem to recognize, but it's just so solid. It's just so much fun to work with him, and he just keeps getting better and better. So I'd love to do a solo Jackie Carma book after this, maybe in color, if there's any interest in the character after this. And Ed and I have talked about that a little bit, so, but I've also talked to Ed about maybe doing a Hawaiian Dick arc or two. So
that's cool. Is that the guy doing the covers that we've seen so far?
I'd originally talked to Stephen Griffin, the Hawaiian Dick artist, about doing the covers, but we realized that even though he wasn't drawing all the Hawaiian Dick stories, he is doing the covers for us and coloring the book and lettering it. It was just too much of a burden. So Ed was eager to kind of jump onto it. And the covers kind of reflect the 70s, more like 70s adventure paperbacks maybe, or movie posters. That's kind of the look that they have. They have a painted look. Again, those, I think, all 3 of the finished covers are up on the blog we put together, and if not, they're on. I have a message board at imagecomics.com that you can find them on there too. But it's just great stuff. It's been a lot of fun putting it together.
Oh yeah, I think there was a lot of anticipation for Grindhouse before it came out. When it did come out, I think a lot of people were – the people who saw it were satisfied, and some people really liked it. And I don't know how the DVDs are going, but I really think one of the missed opportunities was the Machete trailer. And I know that Rodriguez is making like an hour-long movie that he's going to throw on a DVD. But, yeah, I think it's as opposed to the zombie, you know, flick and also you know, the craziness of Death Trap and everything. Right. This is a concept that would fit into that kind of vibe, and that's why I think it's good timing, because I think it's fun, and everyone loves like the old Starsky and Hutch stuff, and you know, Men's, and like you were saying, Men's Adventure stuff. I mean, these magazines that we were just talking about, they're crazy.
Well, we've been working on it for a couple of years now, and you know, at one stage or another, the only thing I'll say about it is that even though it ties into all that. You know, crazy genre stuff. It's not. I don't want people to think it's just a pastiche of everything. You know, it's really. I mean, you know, we're trying to put together. I'm doing my best to put together sort of relatable, cool characters that people get into, and a story that's not just an excuse to throw all this crazy stuff into it. So, you know, all the incidental characters and secondary characters, and you know, all the characters that have similarities to. Genre specifics or whatever, you know, I've got them all figured out pretty well. You know, they're all intended to be three-dimensional characters. So, you know, I don't want people to avoid the book thinking it's just going to be this big, you know, throw crazy 70s stuff at the wall kind of thing. So it should have some more depth to that. And Seth, with Cool, the story he's doing, he's created a couple really memorable characters. And, you know, it's the Cool half of the book is like, you know, a great, you know, really good exploitation. It's almost, I hate to, this is such an old cliche that you know, people are going to roll their eyes at, but it really is like a smarter Tarantino movie on paper. I mean, that's what Seth is putting together. And I'm blown away by what he's doing. He's talked about maybe even trying to, you know, novelize the characters. And,
oh, cool.
I have no doubt he could do it if he wanted to. So.
Well, he's due to talk to me, and I got to make that happen. And especially, I mean, I've enjoyed Sorrow, his co-writer with Rick Remender, and Francesco is just knocking it out with his art on that, as he always does. And I'm really I'm looking forward to what you guys are doing with Cool, and I like both parts equally. And I've you know, after your guys' recommendation of Wizard Chicago, I've been reading Seth's blog every now and then, and Seth's got a very funny mind in a good way.
It was funny until he fell in love. And now it's all about his new wife. So, you know, if you want to hear about that, that's fine. I'm just kidding. His blog is one of the few things online that actually makes me laugh out loud. So
let's move on. I want to talk. You got some stuff coming up from the big two. Which one comes out first, JSA Classified or Superman?
Superman Confidential is out in January. They've already got the solicitations online for it. So
they're very cool. And all-star artists backing you up on this thing, Phil and Andy, Phil Hester and Andy Parks.
Yeah, that's the guy. It's been almost a year now that I've been dealing with DC on just these two things and a couple other things. And the editor that I deal with is Mike Seglain, who probably most recently is most notable for taking over 52 and keeping that running on time for about 40 some of the weeks that it came out. Mm-hmm. And he's just been just amazing to deal with, to the extent that I, you know, he's about the only guy I've been dealing with over there. Just we get along really well and have similar sensibilities. And, you know, I'm doing a JSA Classified arc that will appear the month after the Superman book appears. But that was the first thing I wrote. And then he'd asked me about Superman, and I, you know, who wouldn't want to write a Superman story? I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer, especially knowing that it's being Superman Confidential. It's more about key moments in Superman's history than trying to worry about current continuity and everything. Mm-hmm. So I did. I had written a story, and it revolves around the idea is kind of to explain maybe the early dynamics of the Jimmy Olsen Superman relationship. And this, of course, I pitched this long before I realized Jimmy Olsen was going to be such a key component of Countdown and everything. And I keep hearing people talk about how much they want to see Jimmy Olsen dead, but he's only been around for 60 some years, so he's a compelling character if handled correctly. So it kind of examines the early history of their relationship. Superman hasn't been in Metropolis too long, and Jimmy Olsen is already starting to use Superman as a crutch when he's out. So I'd written that story, and we started talking about artists, and I actually, not to be a name dropper, but I was at Tony Moore's bachelor party, and it was me and Tony Moore and Matt Fraction and Jeremy and Seth Peck, Jason Aaron, and Andy Parks were playing poker. And I just mentioned the book and said that we were talking about artists, and Andy had just mentioned that he and Phil were finishing up the Ant-Man run.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, you guys haven't done anything with DC for a while, but any interest in this? And Andy immediately said, yeah, I think we'd probably dig that. So, the most important thing for me with the first couple things that I've done for DC is that they're top-notch across the board, and that includes the way they look.
Sure.
And, of course, Phil, Phil had to agree to it, but he did almost immediately because they had the time in their schedule, and Phil does a great Superman. And Mike was on board with that idea, and, the results so far have just been fantastic, which shouldn't surprise anybody who knows Phil and Andy's work.
But that's that's great. They can do anything. They really can.
Yeah.
And it was so funny because I really wasn't aware of them before Green Arrow.
Yeah.
And really enjoyed that run so much. And then have followed them on the Nightwing and onto Ant-Man and all these places. And even the brief little things like the Grendel story they did for Wagner in Red, White, and Black. And the couple pages of Daredevil they did for Bendis.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago. And it's like, holy shit, these guys can do anything. And that's why, especially Superman,
They're talented guys who came up. Oh, also, Greg Thompson was at that poker game, too. So I don't want Greg to think I forgot about it. They came up kind of doing their own thing. And, they're both, they've done so many different things by the time they kind of got to Green Arrow, just in terms of style and stuff. And they're both just really, really bright guys. I mean, they may both be better writers than artists. And Phil's doing a Darkness, doing what I think they hope is going to be an extended run on the Darkness now for Top Cow, which has got me interested in that character for the first time. And
13
Steps. And Andy's done a couple graphic novels at ONI and is doing a couple other things here and there.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan of both of their writing. And it's.
I think that helps. I always think, it doesn't hurt when the guys who are drawing stories understand all aspects of storytelling and everything. That'll be out in January through January, February, March, I guess. I think it's Superman Confidential 11 through 13.
Very cool. So we're going to see the birth of the birth of the Signal Watch and the whole.
Yeah, 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 all that stuff.
Were you ever a Jimmy Olsen reader as a kid?
Well, no. I mean, well, I back issues.
Me too, man. I'm not that old. But no, I was honestly. I mean, I understand, and I know I can appreciate the countdown sentiment of today, but. There was a time where Jimmy Olsen actually was kind of a cool character.
Well, it was just, he was like, I don't know. The big problem I've had with the Superman mythos for years is that, and I understand, why way back when John Byrne and those guys revamped the whole thing because, it had gotten kind of out of hand, just this, impossible to defeat Big Blue Boy Scout thing. But, there was a time when, as a kid, when I discovered all those crazy 60s Superman and Jimmy Olsen and Super Baby and Lois Lane and all those stories and everything. To a kid, those, it's hard to resist that stuff. It's all just, they would have stories that took up half the space of a single issue today that would, be complete from beginning to end where just all this crazy shit would happen. And, and when Jimmy Olsen ran, I don't know, what was 190 issues of Jimmy Olsen or what have you or something like that.
It did.
And they never worried about, they'd turn him into a bug or something.
Turtle Man, absolutely.
Yeah,
Elastic.
Yeah, Turtle Man. And he'd,
Porcupine.
Elastic Boy. And
he'd go and drag.
Or whatever. Turned into a devil and betray Superman 100 times over. And, next month, different story. No worries, And a lot of the fun had kind of disappeared for a long time from the Superman stories. I think they're sort of trying to. I think Kurt Busiek and some of those guys are trying to bring a little more of that into it,
And Grant Morrison absolutely is an all-star.
Oh, well, yeah.
I mean, that's all more Weisinger kind of ideas just, turned on its head.
Yeah. And up until Morrison's run on All-Star Superman, the best it had been done in modern times was when Alan Moore was writing Supreme. I mean, that was basically 60 Superman is what it was.
I agree. I liked Rucka's run on Adventures.
Yeah, sure.
I really did.
Greg was, Yeah, Greg's always good.
And I thought Verheiden did okay as well. But no, I agree. I think you're right. I think Johns and Busick and certainly Morrison are kind of saying grabbing the best parts of the classic Superman, yeah. especially the Silver Age stuff, yeah. and saying why not? And let's find a fun way of making Kandor cool, and let's find a fun way of making Jewel Kryptonite cool, for example.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because those guys all. They're not, slaves to being fanboys, but they all have affection for the character and kind of understand the appeal of it from whatever. So, I always think guys who sort of understand the core essence of characters but aren't afraid to run wild, in a different direction. It's my whole thing with the reason I think Alan Moore is the best writer in the history of comics is because the guy can take the cheesiest elements of a comic book, which very often are the most entertaining elements of a comic book, keep all that stuff intact and still make it twice as smart as anything on the stand. So I always think that's kind of what I would aspire to as a writer, is to keep that in mind, retain the essence of something so that people recognize it, but then try to put a new spin on it and make it entertaining without without completely reinventing the character or destroying what's gone on before. It's easier said than done, but anyway.
Well,
so with that in mind, the next thing I'm doing is this JSA Classified arc.
Yeah, about Wildcat, who's a great character with a long history as far as publication.
Yeah.
But really, I think there's a lot to be mined, because outside of a few runs like in Brave and Bold, which was always kind of thrown up in the air as far as continuity, and knowing that Ted Grant was once the heavyweight champion of the world, there isn't that much else there.
Yeah.
So there's plenty to build on there.
Yeah, I think everybody agrees, and I know that when I first talked to Dan DiDio and Jan Jones about doing stuff, that was, I've always been a fan of the JSA and those characters, and Wildcat, and everybody has the same thought about Wildcat, which is that he seems like this character everybody really likes, but there's never been the definitive Wildcat story or what have you, And I think there's always this, there's always this notion that there's got to be a way to make Wildcat work as well as he's people want to see him work, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are fans of Jeff Johns JSA run, they always talk about that. I don't know if you read the run or not, but there's an issue where Wildcat, with a broken arm, basically defeats the Injustice Gang.
I know exactly what you're talking about. That's one of the best moments that he's ever had.
Yeah, that's a great. That's the one time, and people always talk about that issue, and that's that was Jeff kind of figuring out, how to make the character work, but a book as sprawling as the JSA, you can't focus all your energies on Wildcat, so he's often reduced to a background character. So, I just thought when they were throwing characters out there, I thought, maybe this will work. And I know they've done other Wildcat stories in JSA Classified. But the intention behind this story from day one was to sort of use it as the potential for a springboard to something else. It's not designed to just be another throwaway Wildcat story. It easily enjoyed on its own, and if it doesn't go anywhere beyond that, hopefully it works. But the idea is to sort of, maybe have Ted Grant kind of trying to figure out where he fits into, the world of costumed crime fighters at this point, because he's been, he's basically been the JSA's pet trainer for however long.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's logical to kind of say, well, you fight with this group of super powerful beings with magic rings and, super speed and what have you. But your most important role seems to be the guy who sits in a room and, works out with other characters. Why are you even putting on the costume and going out there anymore? So that's kind of the idea behind the story, is to, maybe have him kind of go out on his own and kind of figure that out a little bit and figure out if he feels like he still has a place as more than just a cog in the wheel. So,
gotcha.
That'll be it's another three-part story, and just a tremendously talented Canadian artist who has been a friend of mine for years, named Ramon Perez, is doing the art.
Cool.
And, man, I just, again, it's a case of, when if people don't love what Ramon's doing on this book, I quit. I mean, it's just it's just amazing. I mean, he's so good, and he's one of these guys. He's in Cameron Stewart's studio up there with Kalman Andrzejewski's up there, and all these guys I know from Toronto are all so tremendously talented. Did I say Toronto? Toronto. But they kind of pop up, and then Jay Bones, another guy who's up there, Michael Cho. They've all got their own thing going on, but none of them, you know, they don't seem to have this burning desire to be mainstream comic book superstars like so many stateside artists I know do, and I think most of them could be if they really focused on it, you know. And Ramon's one of these guys who has done a few things here or there. He does an online comic strip called Butternut Squash, which is pretty popular, and you know, again, it was a case of, hey, who would you see doing the art on this book? And I knew we kind of wanted to do something that wasn't like super gritty and ultra realistic or photo swiped or anything for Wildcat without being too cartoony. And Ramon has a real kind of cool stylized look that is perfect for the character. And my own personal opinion is that when people see it, I think they'll almost immediately think of it as kind of the definitive version of the character. So
that's cool.
So that's, you know, it's a three issue arc, and hopefully people give it a shot and you know, enjoy it for what it is.
There's a guy you got to track down, Clay, while he's still around, Erwin Hansen. Co-creator of Wildcat.
Yeah,
great guy, funny as hell.
And, yeah, I'm trying to think if he's made a couple con appearances in like the past 10 years, hasn't he?
He's been at the New York show. I mean, because obviously it's his backyard.
Yeah.
But he comes to San Diego every now and then. It depends. Yeah. I mean, he's getting up there though.
Yeah, Most of those guys. It's funny reading about those guys' reactions to, because really, I think conventions, for about 20 years, the conventions didn't really give much consideration to a lot of these Golden Age guys who were still around. And then there was this process of kind of rediscovery, and you know, Martin O'Dell was all over the place before he passed away, and. You know, you see some of these guys at shows, or you read about their reactions to shows for the first time, and I think a lot of them think they'll go and get lost in the shuffle, but invariably, you know, they're shocked, I think, to discover how many people have great affection for what they did. I was at a show in Toronto a while ago with sitting across from Jerry Robinson.
Wow.
And Jay Torres and I were presenters for the first Schuster Awards, which are the Canadian Comic Creator Awards.
Yes.
And Jerry Robinson gave the keynote speech. And, you know, forget about the fact that he created, you know, Robin and the Joker and all that stuff. You know, he spoke about his relationship with Joe Schuster and the fight he and Neil Adams and those guys waged to get Siegel and Schuster credit on Superman. And I'm just sitting here, I don't know. I mean, if you're a geek and a fan of comic books from, you know, from day one, being in the same room with a guy was just, I don't know, mind-boggling to a degree. I mean, you know. So, it's always cool to see those guys. And even the Silver Age, Herb Trimpe was at a show in Kansas City and all, had a line the whole con, just never, you know, the line never stopped.
That's awesome.
And, and it was cool to see, because, you know, there's a part in the back of your head where you're like, oh, geez, Jim Lee's over there. Herb Trimpe's over here, and, you know, I hope people, and, you know, that's the guy who had the line the whole con, you know.
That's cool, yeah. You know, I saw Ramona Freyden in San Diego, and she could not have been sweeter, and I bought a Metamorpho sketch from her, and I'm
still the definitive Metamorpho is Ramona Freyden.
You're here, man. I know, I was telling Norton that. I'm like, dude, you know, you're right now, it's filling some pretty big footprints because.
If you've seen Mike Norton's Metamorpho pages at all, he's got a little of the Jim Aparo, Ramona Freyden. It's a good Metamorpho.
Oh no, he clearly loves the character, and I know he loves Wildcat as well, and I know he's psyched for what you're going to do with the character, as am I. And I agree with you. I think he is an interesting character because he does have this long lineage, but. As you say, he was always a second-tier guy, and that's why the John story was so exciting, because it gave us a chance to show that The guy's been learning on the job all these decades, and he has been paying attention. And just as much as he's teaching hand-to-hand stuff, you know, he's seeing how the other guys can do it. And never – he's kind of like Wolverine in that he doesn't give himself the credit that he deserves and that he's better than he realizes.
Well, actually, that was one of the first things that when I was talking to Wildcat, I said there's no reason this guy couldn't be sort of the, you know, the slightly less intense DC version of Wolverine. And I don't want Wildcat fans to freak out when I say that. I don't mean that he's a berserker rage kind of guy. I just mean, you know, he can get down in the dirt and kind of, you know, use his wits and poke around, and he's not afraid to hit something if he has to. So it's funny you mentioned the Brave and Bold appearances of Wildcat.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if people out there listening have never read those books. You should track those books down. You know, you can find them
pretty cheap
generally, although anymore, I don't know. But what was great about those books in retrospect is that, I don't know, did Bob Haney write most of those?
Yes, he did.
I don't know who.
Yes, he did. It was Bob
Haney.
Yeah. Murray Boltonoff was the editor.
Yeah. So it's clear that he really liked the character and could care less that it was an Earth 2 character at the time. You know, they had Earth 1 heroes and Earth 2 heroes at the time. And Wildcat would appear in these Batman stories with no mention whatsoever of his JSA connections or the fact that he was an Earth 2 hero or anything. It was like, because they wanted to use him so badly, they just created kind of a new Wildcat and just dropped him in the middle of these stories. And I don't know, he appeared in maybe 4 or 5 Brave and Bold stories. And if you read them all in a row, it would be like completely different backgrounds and origin, you know, just like they just like having Wildcat driving his motorcycle and hitting people. And because when I was doing some research for Wildcat, I went back and tracked down some of those old books, and they're all entertaining, but you read them going, this would cause readers today to just, their heads would fall off, you know?
Well, and even like, back then, even though there was no internet, apparently the Brave and Bold was notorious for getting fan letters just like that saying, okay, how the hell is this Earth 2 character suddenly with Batman? Is this an Earth 1 Wildcat? And demand continuity, credibility. And it was funny because they would say, well, there's Earth 1, there's Earth 2, and there's Earth B, standing for Murray Boltonoff and Bob Haney. And it's like they get to do whatever the hell they want on Brave and Bold. You just deal with it.
And Jim Aparo did most of the art in those, and that was when he was near the peak. So.
Oh, and that's the thing. No, you're right. And I think it really was, and especially as a little kid, that was one of the first books I gravitated to was Brave and Bold. And, it was Who is This Wildcat character? Yeah. I happened to, like, start reading right in the middle of that sequence of stories. And he was great. He was a great foil to Batman. And I think even now, he kind of is. I mean, he's always, I guess the costume is similar to Batman's to a degree.
Yeah.
And you can't help but make the comparison. But, he always did seem to be that kind of, you know, cool, another, like, Earth 2 cross between Wolverine and Batman. So.
Well, he's actually in Gotham in my story, but it's not Batman's not involved. But
Gotham was, and actually back in the day, he was inspired to become a hero because of the Golden Age Green Lantern, who also was in Gotham. So it kind of fits.
It's not to get too anal about this, but one of the kind of interesting things about Wildcat, and this is no longer, but you know, people think of him as a JSA member, but he appeared in, I think, 2 JSA stories during the
classic
Golden Age.
Yeah.
He was not one of the, but back then they would occasionally just rotate a, you know, Mr. Terrific or, you know, whoever into the stories, and he was not really one of the core members. Although I think at this point it's sort of understood that he was kind of one of the founding members of the group. But
that's cool. But I also know in rare comic crossovers of that era, he evokes the name of Green Lantern in his strip, Ted Grant.
Well, the idea was that he had a Green Lantern comic book and decided, hey, I should, even though I don't have a magic ring and can't fly, I should be like this guy. So he climbed on his bike and started punching people.
Plus, it's that classic, you know, 1940s boxing element of, you know, this great champion wronged by the mob and stuff and accused of murder, and he's got to clear himself, and you know.
He had a long run too. I think he probably ran in like 60 issues of like Sensation Comics, which was Wonder Woman's.
Yes.
It was like Wonder Woman's detective or action comics.
Right.
So I've actually read a lot of those backups too, and they're ridiculous, but they're a lot of fun.
Very cool, man.
I just like comics.
No, very nice.
I don't care.
But you have an affinity of a lot of these old eras, and I want to ask about a Tony Harris project that I've seen a bit on blogs and on the internet, and we're seeing images, and I understand you're connected to it.
Yeah, Tony's mentioned it here and there. So the title of the book is The Further Adventures of the Whistling Skull, and it is pretty much straight up pulp.
Cool.
Pulp hero, set in the 40s. We should within a relatively short amount of time be able to give some more details on exactly what the plans are with the book in terms of publication and how long we expect it to run. But it's something Tony on his own had sort of been developing for quite a while, and he had asked me if I'd be interested in co-creating it with him, and we've spent, the better part of the past year putting together the storyline and the world and adding characters and elements to it and everything. So Tony's got a blog at his MySpace page, which I don't know what his MySpace address is, but he's got a blog there that he's got some promo or some sort of preview images of, and a couple pictures of how he's built some of the photo ref for it and everything. Without getting into too many specifics, I would guess it's something that would probably see the light of the day next year.
Okay.
But we're into it. I mean, we've been putting it together for a while. So if you're a fan of Tony Harris's and you understand my affinity for kind of that era and that genre, then hopefully people will be on board with it.
Cool.
Later on when we've got things finalized and kind of get more work done on it, I'd love to really chat about it. But it should be a pretty major project. So
that's great.
Yeah, I'm pretty jazzed about that. I had had very little communication with Tony prior to him asking me to do this, so I was flattered that he thought we would work together or work together well, and it's turned out that we have similar sensibilities with a lot of this. And frankly, Tony's run on Starman with James Robinson is kind of one of the seminal comic books in my development as a young, aspiring writer. Sort of showed me the way in terms of making smart mainstream genre comics work. To be able to work with him has been fun. And actually, a few years ago, I had some communication with James Robinson about a short story of mine that he was interested in doing something with. So it's been kind of, I don't geek out much with, I spent a year as the marketing guy at Image, and I dealt with creators all over the map and everything. And it's always cool to talk to people, but when guys who really made an impact on the direction of your career and your life and everything in terms of their influence, when those guys are interested in your work, it's always flattering. So
very cool. Well, yeah. I can see the line, actually, because I was thinking of when Starman would show so many scenes from the 40s and stuff. You can see Tony's affinity for that era. And
well, if you've read James Robinson's Firearm book that he did for Malibu with Coley Hamner back in the early 90s,
I guess. I didn't.
It's you should read it, because that's the first place where Robinson's sort of affinity for American pop culture and noir and L.A. and all this stuff really starts to pop up. And I think he did with Starman what I do a lot of the time, which is just say, hey, I've got all these interests. I like pop culture and this and that. And he just kind of put them together in that character. I don't know if you remember, but Jack Knight ran like a pop culture memorabilia shop, basically. And
it was constantly just littered with great music and films and actors that you hadn't thought of. And, I know, it's up our alley, absolutely.
Yeah, and he made it work without it looking like some kind of a self-indulgent vanity project. And that's what Hawaiian Dick was. Just, this is a bunch of stuff I love. Hopefully, if I put it together in an entertaining form, other people will like it too. Starman in that regard was a direct influence, even if it doesn't necessarily appear that way.
So. That's cool. And I was going to say your own stuff with Battle Hymn as well. So I can see you and Tony working together on that. Now, something I know coming up next year through Marvel Comics Presents, you're going to have a feature in that called Stingray?
I did an 8-page Stingray story that Lee Weeks is drawing,
Wow.
That's one I didn't have any any control over. But when Warren Simons was the editor on that, and he called me one day and asked if I knew who Lee Weeks was, and I said, yes.
Yeah.
He said, well, I think he's going to draw this story. And I said, thank you. It's, you know, it's just a fun little...
Refresh my memory on Stingray, because I am always worse with Marvel than I am with DC.
Stingray is a really, really cool-looking character, and that's about it. He's like an oceanographer underwater. He's got this really cool red and white costume. The only problem is the full mask, so you can't see his face. But he appeared in Submariner's book, you know, in the early 70s, I guess. And he was an Avenger for a while. What happened was I'd been talking to Warren about doing this and that and short stories here and there, and I was just trying to find characters that I didn't figure anybody was using in Civil War or whatever all their giant event books were, and I thought, well, Stingray. Actually, what had happened was Kieran Dwyer did a fill-in issue of, I can't remember what book it was, but he had this crowd scene with a bunch of secondary characters sitting around at a wedding or something, and Stingray was at one of the tables, and he was showing me the pages. And I thought, there's a character nobody's doing anything with. So I just kind of threw this fun little Stingray story out there, and Warren responded to it. And yeah, a few weeks later, he told me Lee was drawing it, so at least it looks great.
That's cool. Is he like a sea devil, or is he, you know,
no,
scuba diver, or what is he?
Yeah. Yeah, his suit... I guess his suit has like its own circulatory, you know, air system, so he can be underwater, and he's got like big wings, and character I was always drawn to just because I think he looks cool, and
okay.
Nobody's really done much interesting with him, so and I thought in my story the idea is that he's working as sort of like a liaison for the EPA. he's dealing with some guys who are going down to salvage a shipwreck. He's basically on board to kind of suss things out and make sure that they don't destroy the ecological balance of things or what have you. So even though it's just this cheesy little 8-page story, I thought, well, at the very least, if anybody wants to pick up on it, there's a new element to the character. So.
I like that.
And that'll be out, God knows when, sometime middle of next year.
Okay, very cool. Well, that's great, man. That's great. It's been a while, and... you know, since The Leading Man, and now we've got a whole bunch of projects coming up with Hawaiian Dick starting.
Yeah, yeah, and hopefully, you know, that hopefully I'm on the doorstep of quite a bit more that we can talk about soon. But I know you kept badgering me about chatting, and I kept saying, well, I've got all this stuff I'm working on. What sucks is I've spent, like, the last year, I mean, literally, I figured out, I just had this Devil's Due, just had this trauma anthology.
Yes.
It just came out. I had a story in that.
Yes, you did.
But it was like, I don't know, maybe 8 months between The Leading Man trade and this Troma anthology. And I've been working more than ever, but I haven't had anything come out. I'm starting to realize that, you know, it's like it's weird to churn a bunch of stuff out and then spend almost a year just kind of where it appears you're sitting on the shelf when what I've been trying to do is get work done ahead of time. And, yeah, with 2008 rolling around, I've got, you know, multiple books, you know, planned every month through at least the middle of the year.
That's cool.
I've got something that will. I'm trying to think what I. Well, I've got a graphic novel from Oni that I'm doing with an artist named Eric Kim that will probably be late 2008, I would guess.
Okay.
About a hitman that's going to be called Billy Smoke.
Cool.
And then I've got a book that I'm going to do for Wildstorm, I think, pretty. We'll be talking about shortly, or else I wouldn't have mentioned it.
All right.
And, you know, and I'm still talking to, you know, Mike Sulane and I, my DC editor, and I've got a few things kind of cooked up that hopefully will pan out. If they do, I think should be pretty cool. So.
Well, I think what you, go ahead, what were you going to say?
No, I mean, it's off the top of my head. That's about it right now.
Well, I think the batch that's coming out looks like some fun stuff, and I would say Hawaiian Dick and Battle Hymn and Leading Man fans can see a lot that they would like in the continuation of Hawaiian Dick plus 76, and I'm excited for your DC and Marvel stuff coming up as well. I think, again, Phil and Andy on Superman Confidential, you can't go wrong, and Wildcat's one of my favorites, so nice to see a JSA classified that could lead to more adventures for Wildcat. I hope it all works out. And
yeah.
That's awesome, man.
with luck that yeah, I would love to people to like I said, I hope people did have. I know how people get with anthology books, and you know the schedules juggle and this and that. But I hope people kind of make an effort to look for the Wildcat solicitation here in the next month or two, and just check it out and give it a shot, because I really like the character, and it's, you know, like I said, it's intended to be more than just another throwaway story. So we'll see. And but no, yeah, Hawaiian Dick in about a month should be the first thing. The end of November will be the first thing out, and from then on, just keep your eyes peeled.
Very cool. Well, we'll start looking through Image, and then Superman coming out from DC in the months ahead, and also JSA Classified. So cool Claymore stuff coming up, and it's about time. But like I said, I know you've been busy, and I know you've been writing, and I'm glad the fruit is finally starting to pop. So
I do have one more thing that I forgot about.
Please.
In December, I'm doing a text piece for the first of Eric Larson's Next Issue Presents books, which are his Golden Age throwback books.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen those advertisements.
Yeah, what character are you going to be working on?
It's a text piece, so it's like it's not a. I'm doing a story for one of the later issues with a character called the Red Torpedo, but this first one, all of these books had 2-page text stories.
Sure.
Due to mailing regulations. So
yes.
we were talking in Chicago, and he asked me if I'd be interested in writing one of the text pieces, and I wanted to do it without credit because I don't remember them ever being credited, but he didn't want to do that, so. Anyway, it's nothing big, but I did want to mention it because that's going to be a pretty fun book.
That's cool. You know, that's what Stan Lee, those were his first writing assignments, were writing text pieces.
Oh, writing, the text pieces. Yeah. When he was a baby.
16, Stan, write this. Fantastic.
That's a cool project. I know it's funny, there's this resurgence of interest in Golden Age characters. I'm not sure the readers have that interest, but a lot of the creators do, with Alex Ross doing his thing. And
yes.
He and Kruger, and this thing Eric's doing is a lot of fun. I mean, it's really good creators just kind of going crazy with cheesy old characters in the 40s and trying to make them smarter and more relevant. So, anyway, I think the first one's out in December, and that's what that'll be in.
No, I think it's cool, and again, I think it dovetails back to your genre books, where everyone's, as you said, sees something interesting in the surface, and you try and flesh it out and make something even better. So I think you guys, I don't blame you guys for really kind of going back and looking at, you know, not only genres, but even some of these characters that came and went. And no, I think it's fun, and I look forward to it. I don't know how the new readers would react, but, you know, you got old guys like me that I think, oh, let's see what they can do.
Well, I'll say this too. Just I think once Hawaiian Dick and, you know, beyond Hawaiian Dick and 76, I've got the thing with Tony coming up, but I don't want people to think that I'm completely stuck in the past. So I've got other stuff coming, you know, that's set in the present day, and you know, starting with Wildcat and the Superman thing. But now I'm starting to get paranoid that people think I'm just like a revivalist. But
you're not a revivalist.
You know, I want to put a new spin on everything, and you know, it's all been done before, so you might as well try to make it fresh. But anyway, that's that.
All right, as the man puts himself down, we'll thank B. Claymore for joining us and remind everyone how good Hawaiian Dick has been and continues to be. Like I said, I already read the first issue, guys. I got a head start on you, and it's more great stuff if you're a Hawaiian Dick fan. And if you haven't read them, check out the first two trades. I should say the second one coming back into print in December, as Clay told us. But Last Resort is out there as well. Beautiful books. And looking forward to 76, Superman Confidential, JSA Classified, Wildcat, and Marvel Presents even 8 pages of Stingray. So, Clay, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, John.
That's writer B. Clay Moore. We've kind of reached an inadvertent chain of creators. We had Phil Hester on just a while ago, who's working on the Superman Confidential story with Clay. And we're going to be talking very soon to Seth Peck, the writer of the flip side of the Image book 76. You heard about Jackie Karma. We're going to talk about Cool, the buddy team-up in 76 with writer Seth Peck. That'll be coming up in an upcoming episode of Word Balloon. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. You could pick up Hawaiian Dick, The Last Resort for B. Claymore, or Battle Him, his great 1940s superhero. hero story. Each book only $9.74 at InStock Trades. And don't forget to visit InStock Trades' sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at dcbservice.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. Visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at dcbservice.com. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the internet. You can find us, of course, at Newsarama, but we're also at iTunes, at myspace.com/wordballoon, comicspace.com/wordballoon. Any questions or comments on the show, you can email me, john@wordballoon.com. And, of course, if you ever want to hear Word Balloon and you're not near your computer, you can reach us by phone. And I'll give you the number to reach us. It's 214-295-2695. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, this is John Suntress. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2007.